Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up 2 o'clock on this Friday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. We are live from the Yachting Community Studios. My name is Dave Burns alongside the one, the only, John Gambadoro. Hi, Gambo.
Burnsy, what's happening, Burnsy?
Oh, it's Friday. It's opening day.
It is opening day.
I mean, we had opening day, but it was on the road. This is like home opening days. This is our opening day.
So this one really matters. The other ones don't really matter.
This one counts. Yeah. And this one counts. I know for both of us, last year, our streak dating back to day one of the Arizona Diamondbacks of opening days attended came to a crashing halt last year due to the pandemic. Lots of streaks came to crashing halts last year due to the pandemic, but I'm planning on being there. You're planning on being there tonight. And
My wife and kids are definitely going. There's a chance I'll go. I've definitely got tickets for it, so we'll see how it goes.
Okay.
But, yeah, absolutely. My wife and kids are definitely going to be at the game. We bought some tickets, so I know they're excited, both Q and Brooke. Q's been to every opening game outside of last year too. So for him, his streak broke, and I know he was very upset about that.
Yeah, it's a 6:40 first pitch, D-backs and the Reds tonight. You'll hear it here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. 20,000 fans, and I believe I heard Sarah, if not in this Sports Center update, but in a previous one, there are still some tickets available.
That is correct. D-backs.com. I checked 30 minutes ago.
30 minutes ago, yep.
How many fans?
20,000.
20,000, right. Yeah. Okay, but so there'll be some social distancing.
Yes, there will be some separation. Nice. There'll be some pod action. There'll be some, actually, a little bit of elbow room tonight, for sure. But 20,000 will still be one of the most well-attended sporting events we've had in a long time.
It is still one of the great days in sports, opening day for your baseball team.
No doubt.
So if there are tickets available, I encourage people to grab them. Opening day. Even though the Diamondbacks are off to a rough start, opening day is always an extremely special, special day.
No doubt about that. Let's weigh in on what our top story of the day is here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Burns and Gambo, the weigh-in.
Los Angeles Clippers came out, they delivered the early punch, and then they came strong down the stretch to close it out and win this game. The final score, Clippers win it, 113-103.
10-point loss for the Phoenix Suns last night to the LA Clippers in a game that, like the one the previous night before, very much playoff-type intensity, basketball, physicality, chippiness, intensity. The Suns probably wore down a little bit in the fourth quarter. They hung as long as they could. I'm not here to make a bunch of excuses for them. They played hard, but it just wasn't enough, and they probably faded a little bit because of the unusual circumstances. Not unusual, but just the second night of a back-to-back for them.
You know, the Clippers were 52 out of 53 from three-point range.
not quite
and
that.
And that's was close. It 52 out of 53?
I think you might want to check your box score. I think you might be.
Okay, I just went by what I thought it was.
Your notes? You know? Yeah, your handy-dandy notebook.
Did it not seem like they hit every single three-pointer they took?
It did not seem like they did. Yeah.
I mean, the Suns shot 66% in the first half. The Suns were on fire, and they led by two. I mean, this was simply, listen, they scare me. I'd prefer not to play them. I'd rather play the Portland or the Jazz. I think I'd even rather play the Lakers.
Wow.
That team scares me. They do. They scare me. They're good. They're really good. And when they knock down shots like that, I don't know how you're going to beat them. But that's what happened. I mean, they just couldn't miss. I mean, the Suns played a very, very good game. You know, and they hung in for a while. I mean, even going into the fourth quarter, it was an 83-81 game. But then George hits two free throws. Nicholas Batum scores on a drive. Patterson hits a three. Rondo hits a three. And they got it to 10. Now, the Suns were able to cut it to four on a jumper by Paul. But then right after they cut it to four, Paul George hits a jumper. Kawhi hits a jumper. Paul George hits back-to-back threes,
yeah.
And that's the game. So they delivered their knockout punch. The Clippers did. Give them credit. They delivered the knockout punch. It came late in the fight. It came late because the Suns hung around for a while. But once they had, you know, they got up to a little bit of a start in the fourth. The Suns battled back, cut it to four, and then they delivered the knockout punch. And that was, what, 3, 6, 8, 10 straight points. And at that point, I mean, I think, you know, that the game was over at that point.
Yeah, Paul George accounted for 8 of those 10 points, as you just mentioned, with the hoop and then the back-to-back threes. He was awfully, awfully good last night. He was very chatty about the game afterwards, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. Monty Williams, never wanting to use the second night of a back-to-back as an excuse. He said at the same time, I'm not crazy, right? I'm not going to sit here and totally BS you guys.
No. I mean, I'm a no excuses, no explanation. I mean, that's just who I am, but I'm not crazy. I mean, to play a game like that, go into overtime like we did last night and then have to come here and play against the Clippers like that, it's not the best scenario for any team. I did feel like we were not lethargic. We just didn't have the legs, you know, and emotionally it's draining, you know, but I really feel like our guys have to go through that. You know, when you get to the playoffs, those are the kinds of games, those are the kinds of emotions that you have to learn how to deal with. So it's a good experience for us, but for sure, we were tired, especially in the second half.
Devin Booker put a bit of a finer point on it.
You can say that. But like you said, you know, everybody deals with tough parts of the schedule, especially this season. So, you know, you can't use an excuse when everybody has to go through it.
Yeah, I mean, everybody has to do it again, but there's a phrase that I know we're all familiar with in sports, in particular in the NBA. It's called a schedule loss. And when the schedule comes out, you just kind of look for games like this where you just know how hard it's going to be, right? Second night of the back-to-back. This one kind of looked like a schedule loss from the minute we saw the second half of the schedule released a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, but then, you know, after they beat the Jazz, we were kind of like, yep. Well, you know what? I mean, maybe they can win this thing. I mean, maybe they could. And that was one of those games. It was a significant game, I think, for both teams. It really was a significant game. Now, the Suns can clearly say, we were tired, we're exhausted, we didn't have our legs, and make an excuse. And in some ways, that's what it is. And maybe there's some truth to it. But, you know, the bottom line is the Clippers are a really good team. And the Suns, they weren't hitting their three-point shots. I mean, Devin Booker, two games in a row now, not hitting a three-point shot.
Yeah, what are you, 0-2 last night, 0-6 the previous night against Utah, if memory serves.
Yeah, and Jay Crowder didn't give him anything last night. Another good game for DeAndre Ayton. I don't know why they went away from D.A. late in the game. I mean, D.A. was killing them. I mean, I thought DeAndre Ayton was feasting on them. I didn't think they had an answer for him. And then I thought when he got back into the game in the second half, I thought that they shied away. They didn't go to him anymore. They just settled for a lot of shots that weren't going in. So I was a little – I mean, you go look at that third quarter. D.A. from Book, D.A. from McHale, D.A. dunk from Book, D.A. dunk from Book, D.A. offensive putback. I mean, you go look at the beginning of that third quarter. That was DeAndre Ayton, DeAndre Ayton, DeAndre Ayton, DeAndre Ayton, DeAndre Ayton. They get no answer for him. They had no answer. And then you get to the fourth quarter, and it's like they didn't look at him. They didn't even look at him. I mean, I think they got down by – you know, by a big enough score, and they didn't want to settle for, you know, inside field goals. They wanted to shoot, you know, three-pointers. And so I was a little disappointed in that, because I really think if you look at that third quarter, man, I didn't think they had an answer for DeAndre Ayton.
And they did seemingly kind of go away from him. I'll give Booker credit. I mean, he was 0-2 from the three-point line. He still ended up with 24 points on only 13 shots. He was awfully efficient, and he was doing exactly what we've been imploring him to do more of, and that's go to the free throw line, be aggressive. He had 14 free throw attempts last night. I mean, he was really trying to attack the rim, and they were defending him very hard. There just wasn't a ton of help. Mikal Bridges had a good night. Dario Saric had another rough night. But I took this line, the Athletic writer for the website The Athletic, who covered the game, wrote, unlike the talent decrepit version of the Lakers and the defenseless Trailblazers, there was a different feeling in the building against the Suns. Despite the logistical disadvantage the Suns were on, the Clippers were challenged physically in this game. Now, I'm not trying to find silver linings in a 10-point loss to the Clippers, right? I mean, that's a slippery slope when you start going down that. I was impressed with the Suns' willingness to physically not be intimidated by the Clippers, to hang with the Clippers, kind of like what we saw against the Jazz to a certain extent. You're going to push me, I'm going to push back. I think they lost their energy to push back in that fourth quarter to a certain extent. But I think the Phoenix Suns very much so sent a message yesterday, we're not going to be intimidated by you. I mean, we're not scared of you in any stretch of the imagination. You want to go flagrant fouls? We'll do flagrant fouls. You want to play hard physical basketball? We'll do it. That poster dunk for Kawhi Leonard that he had over DeAndre Ayton, I'm impressed Ayton challenged it. You know, I'm impressed that Ayton didn't just go, ole, have the rim, have at it, and he actually tried to get in his way without worrying about whether he was going to be on the wrong end of a poster dunk or not. I thought the Suns, I was fairly impressed with how they tried to match the level of physicality the Clippers put forward last night. I really was.
Yeah, there was one play right after one of those. You know, Book had the hard foul on Kawhi.
Yes.
And I this league baffles me. I mean, I don't know what you thought about it. I mean, I thought he got the ball. I never thought that was going to be a flagrant one, but they called it a flagrant one. But on the next possession the Suns had, Book drove right to the basket, man. I'm not settling for a jumper. I'm going right at the. I'm going to show you guys. I'll foul you hard, and then I'm going to go right at the basket. It's like Dave Burns calling out an athlete and then showing up in the locker room the next day.
Yes, that's exactly what that was like.
I'm going to foul you hard, and then I'm going to drive to the basket. You want to foul me? Here I am. I'm coming right in the lane.
Yeah.
You want to take me out? Take me out, but I'm coming in the lane. I'm not going to sit there, and I'm coming right down the middle against you guys. I know what you're saying, right? I know you're not trying to make, like, an excuse for the loss, but you're saying that the Suns were very much up to the challenge of matching the physicality, and the Utah game was a great example of that. You don't want a soft team. I mean, nobody wants a soft team. And they got a bunch of, listen, and they got the biggest fake tough guy in the NBA on Marcus Morris. I mean, that's the biggest fake tough guy there's ever been.
Did you see that he and Markieff both got kicked out last night?
They both did. The NBA. Two biggest fake tough guys in the whole world. My sister could beat both of those guys up.
I love that.
I have no respect for those fake tough guys. You know, a lot of guys in the league will bring some physicality and toughness. Those guys are complete fakes, both of them.
The D-backs hoping that they can change things around starting tonight at Chase Field. It's not going to be easy. They're facing one of the hottest teams to start this baseball season. We'll celebrate opening day next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Welcome back on this Friday afternoon, and happy opening day to everybody out there, at least our version of opening day. Diamondbacks home opener coming up this evening. Just a very brief five-game homestand, 3 against the Reds, 2 against the A's, and then it's back out on the road for the Arizona Diamondbacks. But, Gambo, good news for the D-backs. Good news.
Yes.
For the D-backs. They have reinstated outfielder Cole Calhoun from the 10-day injured list. Haven't seen a lineup. Don't know if he's in it. I don't think they've even released the lineup yet. But Cole Calhoun is back, and I wouldn't be, given their struggles, I actually wouldn't be surprised at all if he's in the lineup tonight for the Arizona Diamondbacks, rough of a start they're off to offensively.
And he gives them power. I mean, he would have hit 40 homers and drove in about 130 runs last year in a full season. He gave them power. Now, he's not an average guy. He's not going to hit 285, 290, 300. But he does hit for power, so he gives them that bat in the lineup. He gives them that threat to get a couple guys on base. He's very capable of the two-run, three-run home run. So that will be big. That'll be big to get him back in the lineup because he is. You know, they don't have a lot of great bats, but he's a guy that can knock one over the fence. So I like getting him back in the lineup. I like that. I thought he did a good job for them last year. He was, you know, we talked about all the players that have to step up and do. He wasn't one of them. He wasn't one of the guys that we complained about from last year. He did well.
No, he did do well. Cole Calhoun, his numbers last year, just looked them up a second ago, in 190 at-bats in 54 games. He had 16 home runs. He had 40 RBI. In 54 games, he hit, the batting average wasn't great, .226. It was lower than his career batting average of .248. So that's something I'm sure he'll want to improve. But for an offense, still really trying to find itself. Ketel Marte on the 10-day IL. Christian Walker off to a slow start. David Peralta off to a slow start. Eduardo Escobar, despite the late-game meaningless home run yesterday against the Rockies, off to a very slow start. This offense really needs a shot in the arm, and maybe Cole Calhoun can give it to him, at least for a short period of time, until they can start to get guys back. Because, I mean, as they open this series against the Reds tonight, I mean, the one thing to kind of consider is that other guys are starting to get a little bit closer. I saw where Zach Gallen threw 67 pitches in a camp game at Salt River Fields, and he threw a curveball in each inning and didn't report any discomfort after throwing a curveball. Calhoun played in that camp game. Ahmed got 9 at-bats in that camp game yesterday. Maybe guys will start to come back, and maybe we'll see this team kind of even out a little bit from the rough start they've had so far this year.
Yeah, this, you know, you wouldn't have thought about this, but this is a tough matchup. I mean, the Reds are knocking the ball all over the damn place. I mean, David Bell's team is just killing it. You know, last year they were 27th in runs, 27th. They've scored at least 9 runs in 4 of their 6 games. They've scored 11 runs 3 times. They're giving out pizza and chicken sandwiches in Cincinnati like it's going out of style. They got promotions for like a Chick-fil-A sandwich if they score 11, and they've done that three times. And then there's a pizza thing where they give out free pizza if they score 9. They're scoring runs left and right. This is their best start since 2016, this 5-1 start. And they've got a lot of good players. Nick Castellanos is killing it.
Yes,
I mean,
he's
got 4 home runs. Tyler Naquin, the leadoff hitter, he's killing it. Moustakas, Stevenson, Nick Senzel setting the pace. I mean, this team is really, really raking right now. And they were terrible. Like, I think they had the worst record of any Cactus League team or Grapefruit League team. I think they were the worst of anybody in the spring. And then they just got off to a great start against the Cardinals. And they've really just swung the bats really well and scored a lot of runs. And the starting pitching has actually been really good for them too. So it's not just the offense; they're getting good starting pitching.
Yeah, but offensively is where some of the numbers really pop. They're leading the National League in homers and RBI, batting average, slugging, OPS, second in hits, second in triples, second in on base percentage. Yeah, they've been putting on a show. And you're right, Castellanos is a big reason. Naquin is a big reason. And then for the Diamondbacks tonight. The one, and not that it's going to be like this forever, because it's not going to be like this forever, but the one starting pitcher who has been decent so far this year is the one who gets the start today in Taylor Widener. Outside of him, and I mean, that's been, if you look at sort of what's defined the Arizona Diamondbacks so far through the first, you know, 5-6 games of the season that they've played, 7 games that they've played of the season, their starters outside of Taylor Widener, 26 earned runs in 29 2/3 innings pitched. Take out Widener, and that's what the rest of the starters have done, and yet they kind of turn to Widener and ask him to do it again tonight. That's an awful lot of pressure for a kid making his second big league start of his career. Awful lot of pressure.
I know. I mean, his first major league start was just fantastic. I mean, against the Padres, too. I mean, 6 innings, he was great. 3 hits allowed, kept him off the board. I mean, it was terrific for him. To come out there and pitch that well. I mean, he's 26 years old, right? So he's not 22. He's not 19 when Doc Gooden came into the league. I mean, you know, he's got a lot of experience pitching because he's 26. I thought his fastball was great, and he threw a lot of fastballs in that game. But you know this, you know, now that, you know, if I'm the Reds, I've got a game. I've got a game. Yeah. Now you're going to go to your hitters. You're David Bell. You're going to go to your hitters, and you're going to have an approach for him. Okay, likes to throw a lot of fastballs. He likes to gets ahead of. So now we got to see how Taylor Widener reacts. The Padres didn't really have anything to go by, where the Reds are going to have a start 5 games ago in which he pitched 6 innings against the Padres. So they're going to have a little bit to go by on that. So now we'll see if Taylor Widener has to make any adjustments or not.
They did just release the lineup for tonight's game, and sure enough, Cole Calhoun is getting the start and right. He's hitting second tonight in Torrey Lovello's lineup. They got LeCastro at leadoff, Calhoun, Walker, who's really struggled to start the year, Peralta, who's really struggled to start the year. He's batting cleanup. Cabrera at third, Escobar, his struggles we've talked about at second, Rojas at short, Carson Kelly at catcher, Widener is the pitcher tonight. So that's the lineup for the Diamondbacks. Cole Calhoun not wasting any time. More than anything, and not to get like too crazy big picture here, it will be really nice to be in a building, to see a building that isn't stark, completely empty, right? We saw it a couple of nights ago with the Suns and the Jazz, 5,000 on hand. They, of course, had fans there before, but it was just in the 3,000, and they went to 5,000 with that game against Utah. To have up to 20,000 fans there tonight, obviously all responsibly spaced out and socially distanced and all that, but to have that kind of feel again of a crowd, I'm really looking forward to experience that again, because that was just strange, so odd, and it took a long time to get used to last year. I was glad baseball was back, but it was very strange not having anybody there a year ago.
Yeah, it's nice not to have the, remember Colorado, there's Steve Finley, there's
the cardboard cutouts,
and then one place that was at Petco that had the dogs.
Yep.
And then the Diamondbacks did something crazy in left field for Peralta.
The stuffed animals out there in left field, right?
They did all the stuffed animals, and I mean, everybody was trying to do whatever they could. And I give them all credit for, you know, trying to be creative and do something to, you know, make it not look like an empty ballpark. I hate it, and I still hate the fake crowd noise. I don't like that. But I think that they want that too, because, you know, you don't want to hear what everybody's saying out there in a basketball game when it's on the court and things. But I'm, you know, you're seeing a lot of these places get back to you know, not capacity crowd. I think Texas has capacity crowds, but a lot are expanding, and you're seeing more and more. I mean, 20,000 at a D-back game. I don't know that they thought 6-7 weeks ago that they'd be able to do that.
Yeah.
I really don't. I don't think that 2 months ago they felt like they would be able to have 20,000 people at their home opener, but they do, so it's a good sign.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, more and more NFL decision-makers are falling in love with Kyle Pitts, the Florida tight end. How high, and more importantly, at what cost would it take for the Cardinals, if they're really serious about getting him, how expensive is getting him? That's next on the Burns and Gambo show.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter poll, presented by Sanderson Ford.
Gambo mentioned it back on March 22nd, so almost 3 weeks ago. Then yesterday, the Peter Schrager mock draft had the Cardinals moving up for the tight end out of Florida, Kyle Pitts. And suddenly now this has become a big talking point. Can they? Should they? Would they? How expensive would it be for them to do it if they wanted to? Our friend Jess Root over Cards Wire, and we're going to go through this in just a second, did a lot of the heavy lifting for us, and I appreciate. I don't think he didn't mean to do it. He didn't mean to do it for us, but he wrote about it. I'm like, oh, thank God somebody did this, because this is exactly what I wanted. We're going to go through some of the scenarios in a second, but first, let's find out about the appetite from the fans when it comes to a big, bold move for a tight end. Sarah, what do we got in our poll question today?
Yes, we are asking. With this, like you just said, Gambo put it out there a couple weeks ago, but Peter Schrager in his mock draft yesterday has the Cardinals trading up to get Kyle Pitts at number 7. So would you be okay with the Cardinals doing that, doing whatever it takes, making a big, bold move to go get Kyle Pitts? We make you pick. No in between here. Okay. Yes, I would be okay with it. Kyle Pitts is a game changer. Or no way. Why would you give up whatever you've got to give up for a tight end?
Gambo, you or me first?
Yeah, you can go first on this one. You go first.
I'm a no. I wouldn't do it.
And I'm a yes. What the hell? Why not? Let's go. But I understand your logic. I mean, you're going to give up, what, 3 picks, maybe 4 picks to get him? Picks that you need. There's a lot of needs at other positions.
Sure.
I mean, it makes sense to say no.
And it's just not a he's a premium player. It's just not a premium position. And so it seems like it's a big job. I am really curious to see what the listeners say on this. Gambo, you're a yes, because I know you've been advocating Kyle Pitts for a while. The physical ability, what he can do, and he looks like a game changing talent with his physical abilities on the football. He's unlike very few players that we've ever seen at the league with what he can offer at that position.
Yeah, I mean, man, he just looks like he would be, you know, him and DeAndre Hopkins going forward.
Yeah.
Could be just everything. I mean, they'd upgrade the offensive line. I mean, it could be phenomenal. They have a lot of needs. I mean, you could always use a cornerback. You could always use more offensive line help. I get it. I get it. And then you give it up inventory down the road. You have to really believe that this guy's going to be Tony Gonzalez. He's going to be Travis Kelce. He's going to be one of those, you know, sure, dominant tight end. But if you have one, right, you say it's not a premium position. It hasn't been for the Cardinals. It just hasn't been. Maybe they could make it a premium position.
All right, what's the results on this one?
The results right now, 67% of our voters say go get him.
Wow.
Go get Kyle Pitts.
Okay.
33% say no way, he's a tight end. And it's funny you mentioned DeAndre Hopkins, Gambo, because one of our listeners responded, AZ Beer Dad. He said, if you can get a game changer at tight end, you make that happen. Teams would have to choose who to double. Pitts or Hopkins, good luck.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. Like, it's not like I hate it. I don't think anybody would hate it if they go and get a player that dynamic. They just, you know, then you mentioned it yesterday. It's not like Cliff hasn't used a tight end before. He's had success with tight ends when he was in college. The Cardinals have just never had a good tight end. You would have to change your offense. You'd have to get that. You're not going to move up and then throw that guy the ball 3 times a game. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, so that's the poll question. You can find it, and we're getting a lot of votes on it at the Burns and Gambo Twitter page. At Burns and Gambo, one word is where you can find that. All right, here's the story from Jess Root over at Cards Wire. What trading up for tight end Kyle Pitts could cost the Arizona Cardinals. He used the mock draft machine for the Draft Network. It's kind of like the Jimmy Johnson, you know, trade value chart, right? But it's all online, so you plug it in. And he said, I ran roughly 20 simulations. Of those 20 simulations of the draft, Pitts never once made it to the 10th pick. He was never around at the 10th pick. In fact, almost all of the simulations had the Dolphins taking him at number 6. He could even go as high as number 5. So using that as kind of the basis, he ran what trades would look like if the Cardinals needed to go to 4 to get him, 7 to get him, 8 to get him, or 9 to get him. Okay?
Okay.
You follow me so far?
I'm following. Yeah, you can't get him at 10. You got to get him earlier than 10. 9, 8, 7, 6. You got to get him there.
Yeah, and he's ruling out 5 because the Bengals appear to be set on picking at 5. And he doesn't think the Dolphins are going to trade down again since they've already moved all over the board. So he's ruling out 5. He's ruling out 6. He's looking at 4, 7, 8, or 9. To get to 4, according to the mock draft machine, the Cardinals would have to give up the 16th pick this year, their second-round pick this year, and a first-round pick in 2022 and 2023 to go up to 4.
Man, 3 first-round picks?
To go up to 4. Yep.
I'm not doing it.
In this simulation, it took the Cardinals giving up the 16th pick, their second-round pick this year, first-rounders in 2022, yeah. First-rounders in 2023.
Okay, so I'm in favor of trading for him. I mean, Peter Schrager's trade was a first this year, first next year, and a third.
Yes.
But there is a price that I say no. I say no to that. I'm not giving up 3 first-round picks.
Okay.
So I'm out the second you go to 3 first-round picks.
And
I can't decimate my future by going to get one guy. I can't do it.
Totally agree. And specifically, when we put the poll question together, that was the reason why we made it a very black or white yes or no question. Because if we put in some sort of ambiguity about, well, it depends on this, then everybody would vote for that.
Right.
So we just wanted a yes or no.
Okay,
would you do it or not?
So that scenario, I'm out.
Okay.
I am out in that scenario. What's the next one?
Schrager had them, in his mock, had them going up to number 7 in a trade with the Lions to get him. In one of the simulations I ran, Jess wrote, he was available at number 7, so I traded with the Lions. For this trade, it took the 16th pick this year and the Cardinals' first-round pick next year. And that's it.
I'm in.
You're in for that?
I'm in.
Okay. But you can't, as you pointed out yesterday, you can't do that until draft night because you need to know he's there at number 7 before
right.
you do it.
Right. But okay? I'd like that. I could do that.
Okay.
Because, I mean, 3 first-round picks is insane. I'm not trading 3 for a tight end. For a quarterback, for a franchise quarterback, yes. For a tight end, no chance.
Trading up to number 8 overall in one of the simulations Jess ran, he was available at 8, so he made a trade with the Carolina Panthers. This also required the Cardinals' first-round pick this year, their first-round pick next year, but it would also give the Cardinals back a third-round pick next year. So basically, when it's all said and done, the Cardinals would give up their first this year, their first next year. They would get the Panthers first this year and the Panthers third rounder next year to go up to 8 to get them.
I'm good there.
Okay. And then to move up to 9, it's not that hard. Cardinals give up their first round pick this year and a second rounder next year. And they move up to 9 with the Denver Broncos and get them. But
that's
under the assumption he's there at 9, right? That's
right. Okay.
So it wouldn't cost much at all. You'd have to give up next year's second rounder theoretically, and this year's first to move up to 9 to get him. But again, is he there at 9? Is he there at 8? The only spot you can go to be sure you're going to get him is 4, and that's a really expensive price to pay to go to 4 to get him.
Yeah, and that's like, okay, you're out. If you have to go to 4 to get him, then that's too high of a price to go up to 4. I mean, I love if you only have to give up a first and then if you can get him at that last one, which was 9, that's great. I'd even give up a first this year and a first next year, assuming that you're going to be good this year, right? You're assuming that you're going to be a good team this year and you pick next year is going to be in the 20s. So you give it up the 16th pick this year and then a pick in the 20s next year to go get a guy at 7.
You know what?
Like,
I'm glad you mentioned it. I hadn't really thought of it that way before. You assume that the Cardinals are going to be good enough that pick isn't going to be a top 10 pick, a top 12 pick, that it's going to be somewhere in the 20s because you would think they're going to be good enough to be a playoff team next year, and maybe that pick is diminished a little bit. I hadn't really thought of it that way before.
That's how they're going to think of it. You're not making that trade. You're not making that trade thinking you're giving up a top 10 pick.
Yeah.
That trade thinking you're giving up a pick in the 20s next year.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, it's only been a few days since Sean Miller was officially let go. Are we already down to the final two guys for the U of A job? We'll tell you next on the Burns and Gambo show. Legally, they were required to do it, but it's still funny to see the official post of the position of head men's basketball coach on Arizona's website.
You see the credentials? You need to
yes.
have a bachelor's degree.
And bachelor's
you also need to have experience playing the game and coaching the game.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep. You must be available to work a flexible schedule, including nights and weekends. That's my favorite part.
We should have somebody we know that has. Do we know anybody that has any requirements? Like, just see if they even contact.
One of my, I've got a friend who's got competitive playing and or coaching experience at the collegiate or professional level. Experience
of
the nuts.
I'll demand an interview. I've got all the credentials.
I'll send my friend an email and see if he wants to put in. But then the nights and weekends thing, that might be a deal killer for him. I kind of like my nights and weekends. I'm not really sure I can swing that. So Nights and weekends? What am I, an animal? You know? I mean, come on. Is some creature in the zoo? I'm not doing nights and weekends for you.
It's pretty good, though.
Yeah, it does. Jeff Goodman, as we turn our attention here on the Burns and Gambo show to the U of A job opening, Jeff Goodman, he broke the story on Twitter that Sean Miller was out. He's the basketball analyst at Stadium. He was a guest on Bickley and Murata today and was asked the question if the hire needs to be a U of A guy. Here's what he said.
I'm torn. I did something like 2 months ago. Myself, Rob Dosser, and Jeff Porzello did like succession plans for each of the big schools. You know, Carolina, Duke. We went through like five or six of them, and Arizona was one of them. And my pick then, I'm pretty sure I need to dig it up, was Tommy Lloyd. But I went through some other scenarios as well. And, you know, I think Damon Stoudemire he's paid his dues. There's no doubt. I mean, unlike Mike Woodson, 63 years old, who has taken over at Indiana without an ounce, a shred of college basketball experience. Unlike Hubert Davis, who spent 9 years at Carolina on Roy Williams' staff, but is not known as like a dogged recruiter, hasn't been a head coach in college. Damon Stoudemire has it.
And while he didn't come out and say it's down to either Tommy Lloyd, the assistant from Gonzaga, or Damon Stoudemire, the head coach at Pacific and the former U of A Wildcat player, it was sort of, he just said you can't go wrong with either one of those guys if you're U of A.
I don't think you can go wrong with Damon. I don't think you can go wrong with Tommy Lloyd. I think they're both really, really good choices. And as an Arizona alum, I would be happy with either one.
And according to a report, both have been interviewed along with Miles Simon for the head coaching position.
I'd really like to see Damon Stoudemire get the job. I just don't know enough about the Gonzaga guy, to be honest with you. But Damon Stoudemire, I mean, this guy, he was the Pac-10 Player of the Year. Him and Khalid Reeves went to the Final Four with U of A. He's gonna love U of A. He's gonna bleed U of A. And then you look at 5 years coaching at Pacific. His overall record's under 500, but, you know, in the 2019-2020 season, he went 23-10. He was the West Coast Conference Coach of the Year. So he's got 5 years of head coaching experience. So he knows recruiting. He was a star here. He played in the NBA. I mean, there's a lot to like about him. So I looked at both of these candidates, real close. Stoudemire was an assistant at Memphis. He was an assistant at U of A. This guy has paid his dues, and he's a former great Wildcat. Does that mean you get the job? No, not necessarily. Mike Bibby wants to be an assistant on the team. You know, Miles Simon wants to have the job. He's working right now as an assistant with the Lakers. So I get it, but I think Stoudemire's credentials are awfully good.
I think they're just both so different. You know, Stoudemire's a head coach, and he was the coach of the year in his conference a year ago, and what he's done with Pacific, the way he's turned that program around, they were awful when he got there, and it's in his blood, and I get all of that. But man, Gonzaga, it used to be that Gonzaga, that U of A was the program Gonzaga wanted to be, and now it's flipped a little bit, and Gonzaga is the program that U of A wants to kind of get back to, that West Coast premier along with UCLA. Hey, if you want to play West Coast college basketball, there's going to be three places for you to go. Either go to Gonzaga, UCLA, or Arizona if you want to compete for Final Fours and national champions. I like the idea of a guy who has spent the better part of the last two decades helping build everything that has made Gonzaga great, because even though they don't have a national championship, Gonzaga is great. I mean, they are perennially a team that is mentioned to win the title every single year. And even without that breakthrough, to have somebody who was a part of that. I wouldn't be disappointed with that. It's like chocolate or vanilla. I mean, I mean, like ice cream, you know, they offer so many different things in terms of what they bring to the table. I don't know if they can go wrong with either one, but I do kind of like the idea of the Gonzaga guy just because of all that experience helping make that program great.
Both buck a trend. I was looking at the Arizona Daily Star today, and it said there's been 17 coaching vacancies since Miller, you know, began in 2009. 17 coaching vacancies since the Pac-12, since 2000. 11 of the coaching hires came from mid-majors, including Dana Altman from Creighton and Tad Boyle from Northern Colorado. The other six, one was a major college coach in Quanzo Martin. Two were major college assistants in Wyking Jones and Mike Hopkins. One was an NBA assistant in Larry Krystowiak. And two were out of basketball in Ernie Kent and Mark Fox. Mark Fox went to Cal and Ernie Kent went to Washington State. So that was the 17 coaching vacancy since 2009. Stoudemire being from a small college, that hasn't happened, and an assistant at a mid-major hasn't happened. So I do think it'd be, you know, those are bucking the trend a little bit. I guess you can't go wrong with either one. Look, one of them's going to be better than the other.
Oh sure. Oh
I mean,
yeah.
That's the thing. You just don't know which one's better than the other.
And in that regard, if I'm going to pick, I'm picking the Gonzaga guy. If I'm going to pick the one that I think is going to be better than the other,
yeah,
I'm going to pick
Stoudemire.
Yeah, I'm going to pick Tommy Lloyd as the guy that I think would be better than the other.
Just because of the program? Just because of Gonzaga?
Yeah, because of his experience in making Gonzaga one of the premier programs in America. Yeah.
Okay. I'm not knocking it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, he's a top recruiter internationally for Gonzaga. He's learned under Mark Few. He's coached a lot of great players, a lot of players that went to the NBA. Stoudemire was an assistant at Memphis, assistant at U of A, head coach at Pacific. It's almost like he's almost like a perfect choice to take over. Sarah, what do you think the pulse is at U of A for either one of those guys?
I think it's really split right now. I think Tommy Lloyd is the best choice, but I know a lot of people who want to go with an alum, which if you're going to get an alum and Damon Stoudemire is your top choice, okay, cool. But I just have a better feeling knowing what I know about Gonzaga and knowing what I know about Tommy Lloyd himself and the role he has played for Mark Few. I mean, Mark Few is the face of that program, but Tommy is the personality behind the program and why players love playing for that team.
I'd hire Steve Kerr in a heartbeat if he was
the coach. Okay, I'm not acknowledging Steve Kerr in this conversation because I don't think he will quit his Golden State Warriors job.
Just real quick, because we got Ramona Shelburne coming up. Last night, Steve Kerr was asked about it, and he said, I have thought about coaching at my alma mater, but I have a great job right now. I love coaching the Warriors, and I'm not going anywhere. But he did acknowledge that he has thought about it.
I'm going to text him right now.
I know that things are kind of going a little sour right now with him and the fan base. So if that clears the way, Steve Kerr, what's up?
When we come back, Phoenix Suns split their brutal back-to-back against Utah and the LA Clippers. Did they do enough to earn the respect of the doubters that were still out there? We'll get that league-wide perspective next on the Burns and Gambo Show.